is I say you radiate and you state the facts. That's it. Radiate. I am here for this reason. I love what I do. I want to help you ease your pain. I want to help you live a more lit up life. I'm lit up to help you be lit up. You just shine. And then you state the facts. This is my experience. This is how many people have been through this. These are the three things that people said. This is when the card opens.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. I'm so excited to be interviewing an incredible individual who has really help people understand how to be more loving, how to use the heart as your guide, as how to really navigate this world in a more beautiful way. And this episode is going to be so much fun, where we're going to go and dissect a lot more of the love than the selling in the way that you approach your business. I have Danielle Laporte with me, who is a member of Oprah's Super Soul 100. The woman has released several books, including her more recent one, How to Be Loving When Your Heart is Breaking Open and the World is Waking Up, available in multiple formats. We'll put a link to that. We'll be discussing a lot about this book, but also previously released The Firestarter Sessions, The Desire Might, White Hot Truth, has been the creator of Heart-Centered Membership, Heart-Centered Leadership Program with over 400 leaders in 30 countries. She has her own podcast, With Love Danielle, who is reaching the top 10 on iTunes for wellness continuously. And she has been referred by such as previous guests on our show like Marianne Williamson as a bright light, and also called a force field of energy, wonder, humor, and love. I'm also going to add a personal accolade that she is a fellow Canadian, and so we're going to definitely be having a good time. Danielle, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Already a pleasure. It's so great to hear the French Canadian accent. Love it.
Don't tell anyone. This is my little secret, because when I walk around in public, I usually can mask my French accent. So if I see French people talking, I can listen in, you know?
We all already heard it with the heart.
Art-centered. The way I say, you know, if I make a big effort, I can sound like Terrence and Philip from South Park, you know? All right. My secret's out of the way. And Danielle, like, I bring so many people onto this show, and a lot of times I'll have those that are very biased, or not biased, but their expertise is about marketing. It's about sales. It's about online business, entrepreneurship. And we are always looking at sales with a lens of love. And I wanted to do something different with you because you're the expert on the heart. You're the expert on love. And I wanted us to go deeper into the love part of the equation. And I find that it's one of the most misunderstood words, interpreted by many in different ways. And I think a good place to start this conversation is maybe understanding what your definition of what love is, and we can dissect from there.
That's a great place to begin. Well, I love all the things, right? I love the entrepreneur. I love the marketing. I love the discussion about love and consciousness. So I'm game for all of it. My experience of love, my paradigm of love, my understanding of love is that it is a virtue. It is not a feeling. It's not an emotion. Emotions come and go. Emotions come from the lower chakra system. They come from the basement of your psyche, whether it's happiness or sadness. Love is what we're made of. Love is the eternal stuff. You know, to use the Buddhist poetic visual, love is the sky and your emotions are the weather, the clouds passing through. And for me, this is like, this fans out into this bigger discussion about virtue. And this is really relevant to sales and marketing and business, because how I see it is, and everybody could just visualize this now, if divine love, so I like to use the term divine love, so it really creates some distinction, some discernment from pop song, bullshit, transactional, I love you because of what you can give me, love, lusty. There's a place for all of that, but that's not what we're here for, right? So it's just like, that's the side act. So divine love, capital divine, capital love. You see that as the mother, the orb of light, the sun radiating in all directions. And those rays, that come off of that being of love, that source of love, are all the other virtues. So it's like forgiving and resilience and joy and generosity. These are all the children, the daughters, the offsprings of divine love. So all those distinct virtues go back to the source. Like the source of it all, though, is love. And that actually doesn't answer your question. That's kind of a lead up, actually, which is, I think love is all about inclusiveness. So my shadow gets loved. My light gets loved. My greed and my arrogance gets loved. The people who vote differently than I might vote, if I voted, they get loved. Like, it all gets loved. Everything is seen as is, as is. It is not resisted. Love does not request what is to change. It's as is. And it's more than as is. It's invited. It's welcomed in. It's embraced. That's why actual love is magnetic, because all of the gnarly stuff, all of the shadow and the bits and the neediness and the woundedness want to come into that light. Everything wants to come home, and everything will find its way back to the mama. And can I talk about a misunderstanding with love?
Please do.
Okay. We think that love is mostly sweet. And somehow it gets collapsed in this conversation about the divine feminine and receptivity, which is one of the hallmarks of the feminine principle. We receive what God is giving us, what life is giving us, and we do something with it. My experience is that because love is so spacious and so vast, I mean, really imagine your beingness as the sky. It's endless, beyond as far as the eye can see, that everything has room. So a bad temperament can come in, rage can come in, agony, even evil can come in to this vastness, this space of divine love. It's met. It's not asked to change. It relaxes. It relaxes because it's not resisted. And then you tap into like isness, beingness, beyond mind, because it's all just met. It's like the virtue of acceptance, capital A, acceptance. So love neutralizes. So love, divine love, can really have this, my friend and I were saying, this kind of Spock-like quality. It can appear to be cold sometimes, actually, because it's just like, oh, this is what's happening. This is what's best. And this is really something to learn in terms of leadership and marketing. Like, you know, for any of us who have other humans that we work with your loving gaze, you can see the shadow and the light, the weaknesses and the strengths. Who is working optimally on behalf of your mission? And on behalf of your mission, who is to stay and who needs to go? And of course, there's tenderness and sometimes there's second guessing, and you do the letting go with gentleness and all these beautiful ways you can peace out with people. But the loving stance, the embodiment says, this is what's right, and we're not going to, you know, tarry in the emotion of it. Bless and release. Gotta go. Also works great for leaving relationships, you know? So sometimes it looks cold.
You know, the way you're describing divine love, it almost feels like you're speaking about that little voice in our head that seems to feel right about what destination you're supposed to take or action to take. That's often clouded. Like when you're not sure on how to make a decision, it's almost like maybe it's in a meditation, or just like when you have that glimpse of like something doesn't feel right, or you know, oh, I'm inspired to take an action into that direction. It almost seems like you're resourcing divine love. Am I understanding that correctly?
if you're willing to see things as they are and not project how you want them to be or what you want to get out of the situation or what's in it for you, you know, like so much of life now is transactional. If you're willing to like really meet it, no matter what's there, then you see clearly, like your eyes are open, right? You're not wearing blinders. So you go, ah, this is the next move. This is the thing to make. This is how to sell a thing to make. This is what I got to let go of. I got to retire this thing. We got to sunset this. The market requires this, right? You know, like you see clearly, you're not fooling yourself. And I think when that requires courage, and that courage to see clearly requires practice, like actual spiritual practice. You are always, I think 80% of spiritual practice is just cleansing. You cleanse the mind, you cleanse the body, you do all the cleansing so you can hear the divine cues, not the cues of the entities that want you to lose or the cues of your unhealed self who's just trying to get everybody's approval, or, you know, you really got ego-centered goals instead of heart-centered goals. There's a big difference.
It is a big difference. And I find sales makes the test have immediate feedback. Like one of the things I find most fascinating, what I preach about when it comes to sales, is because you're interacting with another human in a sales process, it's like everything comes to the table and you get an immediate feedback. So like if you're coming in with like, I'm going to sell this, I want to sell with love, but like you're truly much more concerned about your commission, about like being the top salesperson than the transformation or the impact you make for the person, the other person can kind of feel it. And then you can see your results start to dipping, and like you get very quickly kind of a feedback on where you are, and all the insecurities come up too. Like sales is a lot more raw than most people assume it to be.
Yeah, I stopped selling a long time ago, and I'm an excellent marketer. So I don't want to sell. I don't want to seduce. I don't want to convert. I do not love the term. Of course, I use the term convert often. We have an online business, right? It's like we talk about conversion rates and all those things are important. But, you know, the root of the word glamour is deception. And I don't want to be a glamorous salesperson. And I want to move my units. I want to 10X. I want to do all those things. I love the game. And by game, I mean the play, not the seduction, of what's going to work. And how do we talk to people about the solutions we offer without talking down to them? You know, this whole thing about pressing on the pain point, I'm not into it. We try not to do things like $49.95 kind of pricing. I am speaking to the intelligence of the people that I want to serve. Yeah, creative integrity, marketing integrity, it's a big thing for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that one of the things that we've noticed with, you know, our internet, the social media, how everything you do gets to be analyzed through the microscope in many ways. People aren't stupid. And I think that's a terrible premise. Like when you think about internet marketing in its dawn ages, was extremely ruthless. And it really had those kinds of attitudes. And I'm seeing that this is not working. There was like a gap where people kind of took advantage of ignorance, could use these psychological triggers to gain an advantage, but it never created long-term results. And it always would be having to find new people, not nurturing the ones that are already in your ecosystem. And it became a terrible business to run.
Well, I think there's two things in what you're saying. One, there's nurturing is where it's at. How we refer to it on our team is like, we feed the people who have come to the farm. They're there, they're family, they're in. Like we're honored to get anybody's email address. Like we want to serve. But also to your point, I think people are just tired. They're tired. Like we can see the dip in how Instagram is responding. People are tired of the noise. They're getting behind the technology themselves. Everybody's got access to ManyChat now and all the things. So it's a combo of some people aren't falling for it because of their intelligence, and then just fatigue. Yeah.
Yeah. The world is very noisy right now, and I don't know exactly when somebody's listening to this episode and where we are in the cycle of the year, but it feels like right now there's more noise than ever. And I have a feeling that regardless of where we are, it seems like that's always being, the volume is only going up of things that are trying to take our attention, things that are happening in the world that seem to all be urgent, immediate. And so this whole concept, even if you speak about sales needing scarcity and you need to take action right now, it seems like it's becoming such a overused language. It's not even about buying. It's like even in the way the news is happening, etc. I feel like we're just having a collective exhaustion around that. And I'd be curious to know, like, you're talking about how you're now much more focused on the marketing instead of the sales. And I'd be curious to see what are some changes you've made in your business in response to this that you find is very effective.
With you talking about the noise, I feel what's happening is the collective nervous system is really fried and taxed right now. And so I don't know if it was Plato or Socrates. I think this is misattributed all the time, but the quote, "Be kind, for everybody you meet is fighting a battle." And the way I put that is like, everybody, unless you are a monk living a monastic life, you are in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn mode. And maybe you're aware of it. And if you are, you are winning. But we are constantly having to intentionally come back to center, you know? The changes we've made are that I'm always asking the question. First, I believe that the business has its own nervous system. And I want my customer, our members, our listeners, to have a nourishing nervous system balancing experience, engaging with the stuff, deciding whether they're going to click or not, or they're going to choose the four payments or whatever it is. So if there's urgency, so we only work with legitimate urgency. I'm funny. I mean, it's hard to tell right now because we're going deep, but like I'm funny and honest and transparent about things. So like, you know, I'm in the middle of, we're launching our heart-centered planner system, a daily, a weekly, 2025, undated, all those things. We're talking a lot about it. We ship internationally, all that. And at the beginning of the campaign, we had to say, order by this date. So you get it, you know, for the holidays or whatever it is. And what I would tell people is you actually have to order by this date. This is not bro, false urgency marketing. Like, I'm taking your orders and I'm calling the printer so you get them in time. So one thing we do is like, we actually share our story about why we're doing things the way we're doing them. Why, even when I have a cart close for our heart center membership. So we only open the membership twice a year. And I say, like, you actually have to sign up by this day because the day after is when the classes start and we just kind of go into privacy mode. So we're really revealing. And I have one of my guidelines for creative integrity with the team is we talk to everybody like they are our girlfriends. And that's why I can never find a marketing writer. Like, I do all of the copy, most of the copy myself, because either it sounds too gangster or too uptight or too flowery. And I'm just like, I just got to find that right combination of like, there's depth. And then we say, you know, come on, you know, you just like, I don't know, I'll say something funny and spicy and... Yeah.
It's one of the hardest roles to fill for someone that has a certain brand, a certain tone, and a certain set of values to find a copywriter that gets all that. I've worked with a lot of organizations, and this is like the tricky thing, but you know, I'll open this can of worms and we'll go from there. It's so hard to find someone to match that tone that I'm often very much more tempted to use AI tools like ChatGPT and position it as something that's maybe not a personal email, but a team email, because what outputs from there, say I have three choices. I have use the authentic words from myself, use a copywriter who's going to try to nail that, but it's really hard. And then I have make a statement that's a bit more, you know, bleached out because you're using AI And I'm seeing that between those two options, sometimes the AI is almost a better option. And the only time that I will write a personal email is when I've personally read it and it has that extra oomph. And I know that's probably a much more tactical, but I'd be curious about what your assessment is around that kind of view.
I love talking about these tactics. So our way is anything that's philosophical and has my name and my signature on it. Like if it's signed with love, Danielle, I wrote it. And that's that. And it will always be that way. We've shifted to, because we have a community, there's lots of people to take care of. If you're writing on behalf of the business, just say, hey, it's Dana, it's Elizabeth, it's David, it's Team D. And then it doesn't have to sound like me. I don't even need to approve it. Be you. Please be you. It's great for people to know that there are many individuals supporting them. I have a really strict policy right now on the team with AI. It will only be used for research purposes. It will never be used for copy. And here's why. And I may change my mind. I mean, I just got some AI stuff delivered to me today. I was just interviewing somebody in our mastermind community. And somebody on the team gave me a bunch of questions to ask this person that were generated by ChatGPT. And side note, like, I don't even know where ChatGPT lives. I don't know. I've never used it myself. Okay. But I got these questions. I was like, damn, these are pretty good questions. And I could see what it missed. Like it missed really the heart. What I really wanted to know is, you know, out of the 20 years of you being in this business, like what's your favorite story? I want the person questions. Anyway, that's not my point. My point is, here's why I have the policy about we will not use ChatGPT to generate anything, because it's created by artificial intelligence, not by heart intelligence. And everything is energy. Everything is energy. And I want soul baked into every word. It is felt. It is felt. It is seen. It exists in another dimension, you know, the source. And that's why. So yes, I think we can all wrap our heads around the limits of ChatGPT. We know we're all wise enough to go like, yeah, it's only going to take us this far because there's questions it's never going to think to ask, at least in its current incarnation. But for the same reasons that I don't yell at technology, like I had a friend who got Alexa in their home. That's not a choice I would ever make. I mean, I'm already living in surveillance culture with my phone and living in Canada and traveling. You know, this is how it is. And anyway, my friend had Alexa and she and her kids were like really shit talking to Alexa and having fun with this. And I see people, you know, yelling at their Google Maps and I'm just like, hey, hi, let me tell you, just a reminder, this intelligence is building off of our input. So if you're teaching it to be rude and abrasive and discompassionate, if that's how you're being, that's what you're teaching it. And besides, I want to be myself, whether I'm talking to a robot or whether I'm talking to a human. I'm going to radiate either way because it's good for me. It's good for us. Yeah.
I say this one tongue in cheek, but I'm always nice to all my technology because if they're going to take over, they might as well make me a nice pet, not a sacrificial.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, my God.
May that not be so.
But, you know, the thing you did say around this lack of soul when you generate something to be used as copy, like it's so crazy because the effort you put in yourself into creating something when it's coming to marketing or sales material, there seems to be, it's just like the actual effort that you've put, it almost like energetically transmits in a way that you could have the same copy be created automatically with AI. There's a copy that you've spent time to create and to send off. It feels more energetically charged. And is this a self-delusion or is there really something here? Because that's how it feels.
Mimicry is emptiness. Soul can't be mimicked. Love can't be mimicked. Artificial intelligence will only mimic things. I mean, we can get into this whole other discussion about if a soul could ever enter, you know, a technologically made inanimate metal object. Why not? You know, the Sikhs believe we live 84,000 lives. It's possible that I have been a dog and a grasshopper and an angel. And why would I not choose to someday embody, have that experience of being a metal silicone creature? I don't know where it's headed. But I do know, like, not unlike the Matrix, mimicry is darkness. Darkness can only mimic. It cannot create anything original. It is really, even AI at its height, wherever it goes, will really just be a glorified photocopy machine.
This is definitely a turn of conversation that I think just gets us really thinking about what is it we're creating. If it has some sort of like capacity and it acknowledges and realizes that the best that it could happen is mimicry, what kind of attitude would it have if it's embodying human types of attitudes? I would be terrified of a feeling of envy that would come from a technology that maybe is craving the soul experience. That scares me. Is it something that makes sense to be scared of, or am I thinking this too much?
It doesn't matter if it makes sense to be scared. You're scared. I mean, back to love, you just have to go, okay, wow, this fear is there. What do I do with the fear? I have similar concerns and fears. I like to call them concerns, but they're actually worries. I just taught a class this morning about transmuting worry. And I feel ashamed of some of my fears. I feel ashamed about my fear around AI and the apocalypse and all the things. And I just have to keep meeting them, meeting those fears with love and trusting. Like you'd mentioned, we're not sure when this conversation is going to come out, but there's a lot of elections happening in many countries right now. And people are freaked, you know, fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And, you know, what I'm saying to my community is like, look, terrible, awful, agonizing things have happened in your life. You have lost people. There have been tragedies. There have been shocking things. You are still standing. You are still loving. You are still thinking clearly. And yet you may be a bit banged up and damaged, but like you got through, you survived, you got to the other side. Like this is not going to kill us. And we are getting more resilient. I'm excited to be alive right now. There have been times I wanted to check out. I have questioned, not for very long, but I have questioned my choices with incarnating now. And I mean, since we're getting this deep, well, let's just keep going. Like, I have come to the conclusion with some help from Yogananda that it's not easier in any other dimension. And I have to get back to home somehow. Like I got to earn my ticket back somehow. Let me take the word earning off the table. I got to find it. I want to find it. I signed up to be lost because finding is going to make me incredibly strong. All right. Like I came into this dark, dense plane so I could find out how light and love and all the 5D things that I am, you know, signed up for this boot camp.
Welcome to an approximate 100-year boot camp of self-awareness, discovery, yeah. Polarity, up, down, fascination, and curiosity experience that we're having here.
And I, you know, back to marketing, is, you know, there's this Tibetan term, swadharma. So, you know, dharma is your path you're walking. It's your path. But swa, the S-W-A or sva, swadharma, is how you walk your path. Like, we all have our path. And some of us could choose to, like, salsa down that path. Some of us could get a bike and go down that path. Some of us could march down it because we think we're supposed to march down this path. But the idea with Swadharma is you do your path actually in your way. It's like doubling down on figuring out who you are and being of service. And I have thought many times, and I probably will again, this happens about every 18 months, of just like, I want to leave. I want to shave my head. I don't want to do this anymore. I want to just sell my stuff. It's not so much that I don't want to do it. It's that I'm asking, like, is this the most spiritual route? Because I am marketing. I am marketing God. And my answer is yes. Because this is my Swadharma. Why would I not do what I am good at? I mean, I got, you know, when I was little, my dad, this is so politically incorrect, but you could say these things, you know, like 40 some years ago, my dad would say, like, you could sell ice to an Eskimo. You could sell shit to a farmer, Danielle. And it was just like, it's natural for me to market. So I'm going to work on behalf of God. I am with the Legion of Love, and I am going to ship lots of units. Yeah.
You know what you just did there, which is something I'm encouraging so much of the listeners to pay attention to this right there, is like when you know what you offer is so much more than what you ask in return, that's how I define selling with love. And I feel like the energy you just came with to say, yes, I'm going to ship a whole lot of units because I know that I'm going to be able to offer so much more than what I ask in return. This is going to have a net positive on the world. And like, this is really how I want to. This is my message, and the way that I want to walk is to get people to understand that, embrace that, and do that more often. And I think one of the final questions I wanted to kind of isolate from our entire conversation around this idea of love is a misconception that could often be, you know, love and light, positive only, ignore all the bad. And I know you've talked about how you have to look and include everything, but it's very easy to fall into that trap, which is just like, just be positive, positive mindset, positive psychology. You need to be enthusiastic when you sell, which can create a bit of this trapped of not being in reality because you feel like you need to carry that type of positivity into a sales process. And I'd be curious to know how you reconcile that.
This morning, I shot 5 videos for Facebook ads. And I'm not happy and positive and up in all of them. But I'm authentic. And I also know instinctively, you have to have a cadence to things. You have to get someone's attention. You have to have a certain angle. There needs to be some visual. And it's up. And la, 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 la. Do I have you? And then we go deep, and then I give you some funny hook and a call to action. But if I personally feel like I had to push it, or I had to fake it, I had to turn my volume up, ugh, yuck, no, I don't. I'll rewatch something. I mean, with ads, I'll watch an ad. I've never listened to a full podcast that I've done. I've never watched a full video of a talk that I've given, but ads I'll look at. And I go, that was gross, Danielle. That was so faux. Take it down a notch. And I know what's happening is I feel my own desperation to sell. Mm. We want to ship those units. We want to turn around. We actually set some goals for a change. You got to go buy this. And then I was just like, no, I'm good. God got me. I'm taken care of. So let me just tell you about what I offer and how I wrote about this in the Firestarter sessions years ago, how I coach people to sell with love is I say you radiate and you state the facts. That's it. Radiate. I am here for this reason. I love what I do. I want to help you ease your pain. I want to help you live a more lit up life. I'm lit up to help you be lit up. You just shine. And then you state the facts. This is my experience. This is how many people have been through this. These are the 3 things that people said. And this is when the card opens.
Well, there's a takeaway. I love that. That actually is going to be something I'm going to recommend for everybody listening to this. If you feel inspired to comment on YouTube about how you would use this formula, put it into the comments. And I'm going to be giving away 3 copies of How to Be Loving When Your Heart is Breaking Open and the World is Waking Up for the first 3 comments that do this exercise. And it will be my pleasure in supporting you, Danielle, and to get people to actually apply a lot more work into how to be loving, because it will have a direct impact on how they're going to be more effective at selling. I have a little dirty secret about my own book about selling with love, is that the entire book is really about the last chapter, which is around self-love, but it's just using sales as a desire so that you get to do the actual work. But how to be loving is going to be the most effective thing that you can do to actually make yourself have more abundance come your way, more success in your ventures, and sell more in the process. And I just want to say, Danielle, I had a ton of fun on this conversation. It went where it needed to go in a beautiful way, and has gotten me thinking a lot about the things that are important. I'm hoping for everybody else, you have done the same. And just as a bonus, we have an amazing tool that you can use to present yourself, sell more effectively, and do it from the heart as well. I do ask a question to all my guests before they go, which is, what does selling with love mean to you?
Selling with love, a commitment to serve and to not stress people out in the process of serving them.
I like that. I like that a lot, because there's way too much stuff that's just trying to amp up the stress. And if you're not making them buy, you're just leaving them worse off. I approve this message. Danielle, we had so much fun. It was a pleasure even before we started recording. I know after we finish recording, for everybody tuning in, you need to go discover more of everything that Danielle is doing. She does have her planners that she is launching right now. We're going to be big supporters for that. We'll put a link into the show notes so people can grab their own. Again, first 3 comments around using the technique, we'll be giving away How to Be Loving When Your Heart is Breaking Open and the World is Waking Up. We're also going to have a link to the show notes that take you there. It was an absolute pleasure. We've talked a lot about how to be more loving, things to consider, what works, why having your soul, your energy put into everything you create is going to make a much bigger difference than any tool that you use to try to automate and not take responsibility for that. So I think this was wonderful. Thank you so much again for your time. And for everybody else tuning in, keep selling with love, divine love. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.